This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Straight Up Texas podcast presented by Whataburger, the official podcast of the Texas Rangers, and a celebration of the Texas spirit that we see in the Rangers and everywhere around us, including our friends at Whataburger. You need to say hello to the freshness and the deliciousness of the Pico de Gallo burger, two all-beef patties, pepper jack cheese, creamy cilantro lime sauce, and crisp Pico de Gallo. Just what your taste buds were waiting for. I've had it. It's awesome. You should try it too. Don't wait though. It's available for a limited time. You've got the burger. You can also get the Pico de Gallo chicken sandwich if you'd like. I encourage you to go and check that out at your local Whataburger. I'm Jared Sandler. Thanking you for being with us, joined as always by JB Sauceda, the founder of Texas Humor. And later, we're going to be joined by a special guest who is very, very much Straight Up Texas and who he is and what he does. I'm excited to chat with Travis Heim of Heim Barbecue. He'll be coming up in a little bit.
And for those of you all that this is your first time listening, so what is the Straight Up Texas podcast? Well, it's the official podcast of the Texas Rangers. And, you know, we won't be deep diving into the Rangers in baseball. This podcast is really about a celebration of Texas and its spirit and, you know, the resiliency of all of the people that live here and the things that make this state such a great place.
Yeah, and you know, we see this in the Rangers. You know, it's a part of the culture. It's something that Chris Woodward is preaching. Regardless of the outcome, this is a young team. They're persevering through this process in which they're trying to get back to being World Series contenders. You know, Jay used the word resilient and proud. It's not easy to look at the standings and see where the Rangers are and have that pride, but we see this and we hear this from a lot of the young players who have taken a lot of ownership in this organization and getting this organization back to where it belongs. So we're going to kick off each episode talking about the Rangers. Like Jay mentioned, we're not going to go into WOBA. We're not going to talk about FIP or any of these advanced metrics. This is just going to be, you know, a general conversation about the Rangers, where they are, maybe what's coming up. But the main part is going to be our conversation that Jay and I will have with a special Texas celebrity guest. So as I mentioned earlier, Travis Heim is our guest. We had a chance to chat with Travis a few days ago, and we're excited to bring you that conversation. And how about that, Jay? Travis, what an awesome dude. I really enjoyed that conversation. I almost enjoyed it as much as I enjoy Heim Barbecue. Not quite as much, because Heim Barbecue is pretty awesome, but it was really awesome chatting with Travis.
Yeah, I love hearing from small business owners. I mean, it's really fun, especially, you know, folks in the restaurant business. You know, they've had a really, really tough year. So talk about resiliency. I mean, Travis and his businesses have just done incredibly well and have been resilient. And getting to hear him talk about that was a lot of fun. But, you know, before we do dive into the interview with Travis, let's go ahead and talk a little bit about the Rangers. So the Rangers have three players in the All-Star game. And how do you feel about that? Do you think we should have more than that, fewer than that? What's the Jared Sandler take?
Yeah, I think three is really appropriate. And it's tough sometimes when you look at the Rangers' record to get three All-Stars. You know, sometimes there is a bias towards teams that maybe are leading their division. And I'm just really glad that the Rangers got the three they got, Joey Gallo, Adolis Garcia, and Kyle Gibson. Because to me, this is the test. If you took away names and teams, and it was player A and his stats, player B, his stats, all the way, you know, all the American League players grouped by position, and you didn't know name, you didn't know team, those three players would unequivocally be chosen as All-Stars. And I'm glad that they got in, you know, for all three of them. There's, you know, a unique wrinkle to it. For Adolis Garcia, this is a guy that 5 months and 4 days ago was designated for assignment, which means that the Rangers were willing to expose him to the 29 other teams. All 29 other teams had a chance to claim him. They passed. Adolis Garcia didn't make the opening day roster. This is a guy who came over from Cuba. You know, it's been detailed time and time again, the struggles that just Cubans in general have, but especially the baseball players who defect. And, you know, sometimes it's third, fourth, fifth try where they actually successfully defect. And Adolis Garcia's journey is quite fascinating. And the story just within this year of didn't make an opening day roster, and now here he is, an all-star for the American League. Really, really neat. And also a great sign for the Rangers moving forward. We might be able to talk about that in a little bit. Kyle Gibson's a guy who's been around the block. You know, he's this is a wily veteran who, you know, perhaps it going into this year, maybe if you asked him with some truth serum, hey, Kyle, will you ever be an all-star? He might say, yeah, it'd be cool, but, you know, I don't know. He's coming off the worst year of his career. He's coming off two straight years in which he has dealt with the challenges of ulcerative colitis. Yet here he is, one of the best pitchers in the American League. And Shohei Ohtani is going to start the All-Star game. You know, as we're having this conversation, the All-Star game has not taken place. So, you know, that's an honor to start it. And Shohei Ohtani, for what he means for the sport of baseball, tip of the cap to Shohei and receiving that honor. But it's really neat that you could have made a really strong case for Kyle Gibson to start the All-Star game. That's an indication of just how good this guy's been. And what also is really special is the feedback that I received, and I know so many others received, from people attached to the Twins organization expressing their elation in Kyle Gibson making the All-Star team, because this is a guy who leaves his footprint not just on the mound, but in the clubhouse and in the community, a really special individual. And it's always obviously easier to root for those types of guys. And then Joey Gallo, this is his second time, but I think because Joey got off to what was perceived as a slow start, for him to come from behind, if you will, and get all-star recognition is an indication of the respect that people have for his game as a whole. You know, a lot of times, if you have a good first 2 months, you might cement yourself as an all-star because in people's minds, you're in that conversation. It's a lot tougher to have a great June and make the all-star team than it is to, say, have a great May. But I think people are so alert and aware of Joey Gallo now. He is such a household name that it doesn't take a lot of effort for people to take notice when Joey goes on a tear like he did in June. And you know, we're not going to go into, you know, these deep numbers, but suffice to say that if you get into those numbers on your own, you go to websites like FanGraphs or Baseball Reference, it'd be really tough to identify maybe five or six better outfielders in all of baseball this year when you consider the total package of what you do in the batter's box, what you offer defensively, and what you do on the bases. And so really cool for all three of those guys. And it's just always great, you know, as a fan. The Rangers aren't going to make the playoffs this year, but to have such a big national spotlight event like the All-Star Game, to be able to say, hey, those are our guys. You know, they're representing my favorite team. I remember as a kid growing up, that was always really cool. And I'm sure it'll be really cool for some young Rangers fans who get a chance to watch these guys at the All-Star Game.
Speaking of youth, the Rangers picked up Jack Leiter in the draft, second pick. So what's your take on him joining the team now?
Yeah, what an exciting addition for the Rangers. You know, I think it was assumed that with the second overall pick in the draft, you were going to be excited about the player the Rangers selected. I think what's maybe a little extra exciting about Jack Leiter is it seems that most of the fan base was more fired up to draft him than anyone else, any of the other options. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, it's going to be the best pick or not or whatever, but there's definite excitement here. And I think it's tough to argue with the pick. He's the guy that I've wanted for the last 6 months. So I'm maybe biased in this assessment, but I'm pretty fired up. He went to Vanderbilt, which is an SEC school. And that's significant because the SEC has been the best baseball conference, much like football, here for a few years. And the level of competition in the SEC is above and beyond the rest of college baseball. Not that the other conferences don't, you know, compete at a high level, but for a pitcher like Jack Leiter to have the success that he's had at the SEC within the SEC is really telling. And it's not just success, it's dominance. If you look at his numbers, the way he's operated, and this is also the son of a near 20-year major leaguer, the nephew of a major leaguer, the cousin of a major leaguer. This is a baseball family. And I think that baseball is something that he thinks, you know, it's not just the physical talent. I think he's got a high baseball IQ. And then the one thing for fans that really stands out to me about Jack Leiter is his success within the strike zone. And it's not just about throwing strikes. You know, a lot of these guys can throw strikes, but not a lot of guys can have success or dominate in the zone. They rely on getting people to swing at their pitches outside of the zone or simply getting weak contact around the perimeter of the zone, those 50-50 calls. And not that Jack Leiter wants to live over the middle of the plate or make habit of that, but his stuff is so good that he is not just good, but dominant when he throws pitches inside the strike zone, specifically his fastball. Fastballs inside the strike zone for the best hitters in baseball typically go a long, long way. But for Jack Leiter, he's got the characteristics with that particular pitch that make it a super effective pitch. And that's what I think I and many others really like about Jack Leiter. Excited for the Rangers to officially sign him, get him into the system, have him start, you know, wherever it is that he starts in the minor leagues and follow his journey to the big leagues. And hopefully someone who'll be a Ranger for a long time.
That's awesome. Well, you know, speaking of just a long time, you know, baseball seasons can feel kind of long and we're at the halfway point. So what are you looking forward to in the second half of the season?
Yeah, I'll give you three things. The first thing is the trade deadline. That's the next big event. And it's typically July 31st. I believe this year it's July 30th because the 31st falls on a weekend and Major League Baseball didn't want the awkwardness of teams that have day games with the usually 3 o'clock Metroplex time, 3 o'clock Central time trade deadline, having to not play a guy and maybe take a guy. They want all night games, right? And that makes sense. So it's going to be July 30th. And for the trade deadline presents an opportunity for a lot of the teams. I'd say that, you know, they're typically going to be maybe a handful or so teams who they're not really buyers. They're also not going to really be sellers in a big way. So it just kind of is what it is. It's an exciting action-packed day for baseball, but not maybe for that particular team. But the Rangers have an opportunity to be heavily involved in the trade deadline. And they're going to have some really interesting and tough decisions to make with guys like Joey Gallo and Adolis Garcia and Kyle Gibson. They're three all-stars, guys like Ian Kennedy. And then there are always some players, maybe a Jordan Lyles or Mike Fultonevich, you know, guys who've pitched well of late, maybe not going to bring back big hauls, but guys who you could see some movement from. And, you know, the decisions are this, you know, because I know that, listen, Joey Gallo, why the heck would you trade Joey Gallo? And maybe the Rangers do, maybe they don't. You know, it would be awesome if the Rangers could sign Joey Gallo to an extension and keep him in a Rangers uniform for a long time. And that's a possibility. But the trade deadline presents some tough decisions for organizations to make a determination. You know, is the trade package that fill-in-the-blank team is offering us worth more to us for the next 4 to 5 years than keeping this player around and signing him to an extension? And the reason why Joey Gallo's name is mentioned is because he's a free agent after, not this season, but next season. And what no team ever wants is for a player as good as Joey Gallo to leave them in free agency, and all you get in return is a compensatory pick, which could turn into a really good player. But typically, the player who leaves you in free agency is going to give you more value than that compensatory pick as a player for you, or what he can bring back in return could be of greater value. So it's going to be a really interesting and exciting, perhaps a pivotal stretch for the Rangers. Beyond the trade deadline, I'm excited to see Joey Gallo and Adolis Garcia. I hope that they're Rangers after the trade deadline. And I'd love to see what the year looks like for them because, Jay, as you mentioned, it is a long season and a lot can change over the final 2.5 months of the season. Is Joey Gallo still among the 5 to 7 best outfielders in the American League in baseball when the season ends? Adolis Garcia, is he able to keep up this pace? And just generally speaking, I think it's always fun as a fan to identify a guy or two that you're just excited to watch play because they do special things that most players don't or can't do. And Adolis Garcia and Joey Gallo are two of those guys, maybe the guys who more than anyone else with the Rangers represent that. And then the final thing is the young guys, the guys who aren't Rangers right now, the guys who could be Rangers for the next several years that are in the minor league system, guys like Curtis Terry, a guy like Leody Taveras, who started the season with the Rangers, but had a rough start, but has been really good in AAA and will undoubtedly get another opportunity. Sam Huff is another guy. And then perhaps some of the pitchers who the Rangers have coming up through their system, just following the young guys and watch. And Josh Young, how can I not mention Josh Young as well, the Texas Tech product out of the San Antonio area, who was their first round pick 2 years ago. You know, watching these guys perhaps get an opportunity at the big league level will be a lot of fun for fans, and something we'll probably see, if not from all of those guys, certainly some of those guys over the next 2.5 months.
Man, I love your energy for baseball, and you know, the depth. I mean, you'd be high on my draft pick of on my draft list for who's going to play baseball trivia with me. So, dude, you know, now we're going to move on to talking to Travis. We checked the box around the resiliency of the Rangers and just the passion and optimism of the team. So what do you say we go ahead and shift over and talk to Travis about baseball, or about a barbecue rather?
Well, let's do it. First, though, that's why we make such a great tag team, because you got the Texas side. You love baseball, but you just own Texas. I love Texas, but baseball's my thing. I mean, we just – it's, you know, yin and yang. What's salt and pepper? I don't know.
Whatever. Yeah, at a minimum, everybody can agree that barbecue is delicious. So yes. Whether you love or hate Texas or love or hate baseball, barbecue brings people together. So
no kidding. Yeah. And before we talk to Travis, just a reminder – I want to thank our friends at Whataburger. This, of course, is the Straight Up Texas podcast presented by Whataburger. You've got to go to Whataburger and check out the Pico de Gallo burger. It's available for a limited time. I had it the other day. I love Pico de Gallo and I love burgers, so it was a really easy decision for me. But you've got the two fresh beef patties, 100% fresh beef, the slices of pepper jack cheese, the creamy cilantro lime sauce. It brings it all together. So head on over to Whataburger. Again, it's available for a limited time. The Pico de Gallo burger. You can also get the Pico de Gallo chicken sandwich if that's more of your thing. But joining us now on the Straight Up Texas podcast presented by Whataburger is a friend of mine. And in spite of our friendship, he's doing great things. He's the founder and pitmaster of Heim Barbecue. You might be familiar with the locations in Fort Worth. There are two of them. There's also a location in Dallas, right next to Love Field, which I love because it's a little bit closer for me. So whether you're in Dallas or Fort Worth, you can enjoy Heim Barbecue. He's also a podcaster, and we're going to get into that as well in a little bit. But joining us now is Travis Heim. Travis, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm excited.
So we're going to get into your story. I know that a big part of your story is Texas and your time spent in Texas, and obviously now, you know, really carving out your own place in Texas from a you know, a barbecue standpoint, which is no small feat. But, you know, we call this the Straight Up Texas podcast. I'm curious, when you just hear the phrase Straight Up Texas, what jumps to mind for you?
Great question. Straight Up Texas. I'm thinking boots. I'm thinking cowboy hats. I'm thinking Longhorn cattle. Football, baseball, obviously. I think that's a great name. It's a great name for what y'all are doing. But yeah, I don't know. There's a clear connection with barbecue and native Texans. It's in our bones, you know, almost to some extent. So I guess that makes sense to have me on in that regard.
Well, barbecue is such a big part of Texas, and we'll get into that. I got to ask you, though, this podcast is presented by Whataburger. You just took a sip out of a Whataburger cup. I know that you – there you go. I got mine, too. I got to probably show the logo, right?
Perfect,
Jay's got the spicy special shirt. What's your go-to Whataburger order?
Oh, man. Well, for one, I've been on a diet lately, which is just a nightmare. But I would say go to, and then I'm probably going to have to get this later. I like the number two with cheese, right? Simple. But grilled onions, grilled jalapenos, and a large fry. Like, if you could get a bucket of fries, I would buy a bucket of fries from them, you know, but yeah.
Dude, a bucket of fries, I mean, I feel like their large is kind of like a bucket almost. I mean, it's that like like vertical trough of fries. Yeah. Are you a spicy or a regular ketchup guy?
I mean, both have their merits, you know. I'd say I like the spicy. Spicy's good. Sometimes you need that a little bit, you know. And then they have the what's the pepper sauce or whatever, you know. That now we're talking fringe menu options, but it's all good. I'm a big fan, so.
Fair enough. So, you know, I've got to go somewhere that's, you know, a little bit divisive. As you know, someone who's obviously steeped their career in barbecue in general, you know, I bought one of these, what do they call it? Traeger grills a year ago.
Sure.
And some of my, you know, barbecue brethren have been giving me a hard time about it. But they're the same people who turn around and like, you know, speak all day about their big green egg. So like, you know, as a barbecue expert, can you walk us through your thinking around the scientific advances in barbecue that are taking place today?
Great question. I feel like personally your smoker shouldn't have an electric plug. Maybe that's just me being a purist, but we do a lot of barbecue classes, and we just did some this weekend, and you see a mix of the pellet smokers, and Traeger's a good brand, and then there's a bunch of others, but Green Eggs kind of offset smokers, more traditional stuff. And I think, you know, they're all great. Like if anything, the cool thing with pellet smokers is I feel like it's kind of made barbecue more accessible to a lot of people where, you know, let's say even 5 years ago or something, there was you almost had to like build your own smoker. You know, there was some options on the kind of commercial market, but you couldn't really get, you know, something like that's just super easy. And then too, it's like a lot of guys and ladies don't have 16 hours to like be tied to a smoker and cook a brisket or whatever. So I joke about it a little bit, but I think if anything, it's cool that, you know, you can control all those things with the pellet smokers. And, you know, there's a little bit of a difference. Like when we do the classes, we talk about, you know, just different points of contact from the heat and your smoke level, your humidity level, all that stuff. But at the end of the day, if you can cook a really good brisket and, you know, an offset smoker, or cook it on a pellet grill, that's all that matters. You get into there's a bunch of like, you know, I don't even know how to describe it. It's like your favorite baseball team, you know, it's like what church you go to. It's like these guys are like, you have all these rules of unwritten rules of barbecue and, you know, God forbid someone wants, you know, like, God forbid someone wants to see their family while they're cooking a brisket. You know, it's like it gives you a little more freedom, I guess, with some of that stuff. So I think they're fine. Don't let anyone bully you.
No, I mean, my wife did give me a hard time because I've got one of these like huge, you know, like batteries that you can use like when you're camping or whatever. And last week I was making a rack of ribs and I had it on the Traeger and she's like, is your barbecue smoker running off of a battery pack right now? You know? And so even she was giving me a hard time, but you know, I'm with you on that. Like there is nothing more fun to me than sitting around all night, you know, at a camp or at a like cook-off, watching the brisket, staying up all night, you know, all that. So, you know, tell me, like, I mean, for me, that's the thing that got me into brisket and cooking and stuff was really just that experience of being like wrapped up in something for 16 hours. But like, what ultimately got you into barbecue, you know, as a whole?
Yeah, I think, I mean, if anything, it was really family initially for me. Cause too, like the first brisket I cooked, I was 12. And so this is like, you know, barbecue's like cool now or whatever. Like I was like the nerdy kid that was cooking barbecue, you know, years ago, whereas like other kids were, you know, doing fun things. But a big part of it was my grandfather, who's from Hereford, Texas, up in the Panhandle, if you're familiar with that. And he would cook a lot at the house and, or, you know, at his house and do ribs and stuff. And then my uncle was from Marshall, Texas, in East Texas, and he was a welder. And so he actually, in like the 60s and 70s, would weld smokers, you know, way before all of the stuff that's going on now. And so he had some kind of really cool, giant, custom, you know, smoker stuff. So it was always kind of, I was like around it, you know, nobody in my family did, worked in restaurants or did anything professionally. But I would say, if anything, it was just kind of like to emulate my grandfather and like, you know, in hindsight, maybe like he'll think I'm cool if I do these, you know, cook some ribs and stuff. And then I got, you know, the bug or whatever. And what I really enjoyed as I got older and into high school, college and everything was just the like science behind it. You know, I mean, you're really getting down to, you know, controlling your temperature, you know, especially if you're using a wood fire in an offset or something like that. So it's like, you know, you spend, like you said, all night cooking something. And then if it turns out great, it's just elation. And you're like, I've never been happier. And if it turns out, you know, bad, it's like, you know, missing the playoffs, last game of the season, you're just absolutely heartbroken and devastated. And then all you can think about is the next cook that I'm going to do and how I'm going to change, you know, and do something different. So there's a lot of challenge to it. And even every day for us in the restaurants, we're trying to control all the different variables and be as consistent as possible. So, you know, it's still fun. That's the part of it I enjoy.
So you mentioned the restaurant. I'm curious what the origin story is of Heim, because that's, to go off on your own, to do your own thing, there's a degree of perseverance and fearlessness. And those are some of the qualities I know we associate with being straight up Texas. So what's the Heim barbecue origin story?
Yeah. How can I summarize? I, you know, kind of what we were saying, I grew up cooking barbecue and that was just sort of fun, you know, and then in college we'd save enough money, me and my roommates, for a 30 pack of beer and a rack of ribs or a brisket or something like that. And so I kind of continually, you know, was still screwing around with it and didn't really do anything professionally, and worked at some restaurants here in Fort Worth and then at some places in Austin, and just kind of, you know, whatever, didn't know what to do. I want to do barbecue full time, but you know, this is to like 8 years ago, 9 years ago. So the thing that really changed everything, I got a smoker from my uncle who in Marshall, Texas, who I was telling you about. And, you know, it's just this giant, like we had a 99 Honda Civic two door, like it couldn't pull a lawnmower, you know, and we're like, I'm asking him, hey, can I have this, you know, one ton smoker? And so I was like, I'll give you all the money I have. And he was just like, come pick it up. So we drug it out of the mud on the farm in Marshall, Texas with the U-Haul truck, brought it back to Fort Worth, and I had no idea how to use it or what to do. And we just kind of played around with it. And so I realized very quickly, like I burned, you know, about a quarter quart of wood just to cook like one brisket on it. So it was like, this isn't practical at all. And we got this idea to do like parties, and I guess now you would call it a pop-up, but we called it T&E. My wife's name is Emma, T&E Meat Club. And it was like a fight club, right? Like an underground, you know, you had to know somebody, you had to get invited or whatever. Yeah, exactly. And we'd have a friend that would just be playing, you know, guitar and cold beer and whatever. And then I'd cook stuff and try different recipes. And so it was about a 500 gallon propane tank. So, I mean, it's a big, really big smoker. So we did that. And then it you know, that just got kind of crazy. And we had like 80 people in a 2000 square foot house. And, you know, it was like, this is just craziness. And my friend Hans at Swiss Pastry Shop in Fort Worth, he let us do one at his restaurant. And we're kind of thinking about moving to Austin, working for some friends and all this. I was in the oil and gas industry and I got laid off because my project was over. And it was really more than anything my wife that was like, let's just go for it. You know, let's try to do something. And I had been working in Austin and driving back and Monday. So I drove back Sunday night. Monday morning, I was looking up used propane tanks on Craigslist so that I could build another smoker because we needed more capacity for our pop-up dinners. And I found a food truck that was for lease in near south side of Fort Worth. And it just kind of all clicked. And so I talked to the guy and we basically pulled our smoker up behind it and opened up. And that we spent basically all of the money we had on the deposit, which luckily the owner didn't know at the time, but then the rest of the money on meat for the first day. So literally when we opened the doors the first day, we had like less than $100 in our bank account. And I like to say it was an act of faith. You know, I don't know if that's straight up Texas necessarily. It's more probably foolishness, but in our case, you know, in our case, it worked out. So
I'm curious, what was, and obviously there are a lot of challenges and you identified some of those challenges. Was there a moment where you and Emma were like, this is just not going to work. We got to figure out a way to overcome this. And then on the other hand, was there a moment when you're like, all right, we're clear. Like, this is working. We've got this thing rolling.
Yeah, I think, you know, we were just very blessed to never really experience any kind of failure with that so far. The biggest thing was like, I remember there was a time where we had the weekends and then, you know, we're cooking as much as we can. I would sleep in the bar. Usually when the bar would close, I would sleep in there. Or I would sleep in our, at this point we upgraded to a minivan, you know, that was had 500,000 miles or whatever. And so I would sleep in the minivan or at the bar working 24 hours. Emma would be basically as soon as we were done would leave and then go home and then make banana pudding, potato salad, everything for the next day. And so we were just like zombies. And we had a couple of caterings that were great, but it was just feeling of, I think it was at least 36 hours without sleep for both of us just working. And it was awesome, but it was kind of like, we got to figure this out. Like we can't do this, forever. And so, then we hired our first employee. So that was great. So then at least we had one person to kind of help out and, get a little bit of sleep here or there, in the food truck. But I think, the big moment where at least we felt comfortable was we had been open maybe 2 or 3 weeks in the food truck and we were kind of like still getting our footing. And I felt really confident about the food we were putting out, but still it's like food trucks are still kind of weird in Fort Worth. You know, it's not like a Austin where whatever. So like, I'm going to go to this, you know, crappy bar and a food truck and eat there. That doesn't make any sense. And so slowly building. And then we got a good review from somebody. And it was like that next day we opened, there was 70 people in line and we were like, whoa, this is crazy. And so after about a week, then Emma was still working her job in oil and gas. And we finally were like, okay, I think you can start doing this full time. And, you know, it was just the rest is history, I guess. But there's probably every day moments of terror and happiness, you know, especially back then when you're like, you know, it was literally like the conversation of, hey, if this doesn't work out, we're going to have to move in with your parents. Like you understand. Like, it's just like we put all of our chips, you know, in as much as you can. So it was crazy, but it worked out really well. And Fort Worth has been huge supporters of us. So now it's fun to open in Dallas and try to, you know, expand over there. And it's been crazy. The last few years have been wild.
Well, we've all benefited from that perseverance. I know I try to get as much time as I can at some bacon burn ends last week. Probably had too many bacon burn ends.
Heck yeah.
But it's definitely worth it. I'm curious, you know, you mentioned the beginning that when I asked you what Straight Up Texas is, you mentioned barbecue being a part of that. And I think Texas is a state full of pride and, you know, maybe competitive with other states or other regions, and barbecue is certainly a discussion. I'm curious though, if someone were to walk in to one of your storefronts, or they were to you know, have some Heim barbecue, in what ways does Heim barbecue represent Texas and what Texas is about?
Yeah. You know, great question. I think, it's barbecue is, you know, I guess I'm like a seventh generation Texan. Allegedly my great, great, whatever snuck over on a cattle boat from Germany, landed in Galveston, which I don't, you know, I haven't fact checked that, but that's what my dad told me at least. So, it's like in our bones, you know, there's a lot of German, Czech immigrants in Central Texas, South Texas. You have influence of obviously, Mexican Americans, you know, the Tejano culture, and that gets you into barbacoa and all that type of stuff. So Texas is unique, I think, because it's regional compared to Kansas City or Carolinas or that, but then we have sort of sub regions of sort of East Texas style, Central Texas style, all this stuff. So, for us, you know, and for me personally, you know, I care a lot about the history of barbecue, history of Texas barbecue. And so we try to take all of those things that I think are foundational to what is Texas barbecue, being, you know, community focused, being an inclusive, welcoming environment where, you know, I want to walk in the restaurant and I see, you know, every type of person, you know, on every spectrum of whatever that's hanging out, having a great time, you know, be a place where you can bring a date, you know, but you can also have your kids running around. Everyone's comfortable, you know, it's a whole fun thing. And I think that's, you know, important too, and kind of tied into the history of Texas barbecue is really a communal kind of thing. But, you know, for us from a food standpoint, you know, there's basics. We use oak wood, post oak mainly, but a little white oak, a little pecan. You know, it's all wood fires. It's just as good as we can possibly make it. The best quality beef and pork and everything else we can buy. So our brisket's very traditional. You know, it's something that we really put a ton of pride into. Beef ribs, you know, all that stuff is very Texas. But then, you know, we have some fun with it. Like you mentioned, the bacon burn-ins. You know, burn-in traditionally is like a Kansas City type thing, you know, and essentially what they'll do is cook a brisket, and then the fatty end of the brisket halfway through or something, slice it in half, cube it into little chunks, rub it in sauce and more rub, put that back on, and then use kind of the lean in for slices. Well, so if you do that in Texas, they'll throw you out of the state, right? Like it's like sacrilege. So can't do that. And so my thought was, what if we took a slab of bacon and basically did a Kansas City style, you know, sort of burn end with it. And hands down, it's, you know, our most popular thing that we make. And now it's cool to see like not only other places in the state, but like all over the world are doing some form of a bacon burn in, pork belly burn in. So it's cool. So I think I've talked with a lot of friends, like one of my good friends, Wayne Miller, probably wouldn't mind me saying, but you know, it's his family's place and he's been there forever. You know, he doesn't have the luxury necessarily of being super creative with all this stuff. You know, somebody comes in and they want the brisket, the beef ribs, the way it is. And so I think what's cool to see, and it's one of the best places, in my opinion, in the world for barbecue. But I think what you see with a lot of the new guys, a lot of the new kind of food truck places is, you know, sort of a respect and, you know, let's say a reverence, you know, for barbecue and those traditions, but then also a little more creativity, a little more freedom to try different stuff, do different sausages, do different, you know, kind of menu items and stuff like that. So I don't know if that answered the question at all, but sorry.
Well, you mentioned a couple times just, you know, the community aspect of barbecue and, you know, Fort Worth being really supportive. And, you know, I mean, you're pretty outspoken about small business and challenges and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, what do you think, I mean, what's your sort of philosophy on Texas and its relationship with small businesses or like the small barbecue joints, right? I mean, like we've got the big chains, Rudy's and, you know, those guys, they're obviously like the big rock star companies, but like who's out there talking about the smaller, you know, chains and, you know, what role do you feel like you play in promoting them?
Yeah. You know, barbecue, like we said, is, it's tribalistic, you know, it's almost like, you know, if I were to wear, you know, God forbid a Blue Jays hat or something, you know, it's like, no, like Rangers are my team. You know, I'm not, this is my place that I go to that I care about and love. So I think it's interesting with us now, cause we've gone into, you know, multiple locations and we're growing and all that. But I think, especially I can speak to Fort Worth and Dallas as two places, but I know Austin is the same way. But the great thing about Texas is you have, like, we literally had a smoker and opened a food truck and very, very little money and it clearly no idea what we were doing. So I think it's awesome that you have these, you know, communities where you can do that, where you can open in a food truck, open in these smaller places. And as long as your food's good, and I think as long as people feel you're genuine and you're really putting in a ton of, you know, hard work and effort, that people are going to support you. And two, a lot of people, you know, will kind of dog on the bigger guys, the Rudy's and the places like that. Well, you know, there's a reason that they're open and that they're successful. You know, that's what's interesting about barbecue. I'm trying, you know, there's plenty of Spring Creek. You know, I know those guys with Spring Creek and, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, well, you know, it's not Franklin. Well, it's not supposed to be, you know, I mean, that's what's cool about barbecue is you can go to a place like, you know, Franklin and Austin and stand in line for 5 hours and all that. And they're using prime brisket and they're doing all that. And it's awesome and it's the best thing ever. Well, some people like, you know, I got barbecue and I got 15 minutes, you know, so it's like, where can I go that's going to be affordable, that's going to be consistent? And so you have those places like Spring Creek and Rudy's and all that. And for us, that's where we try to balance that line, which is, I don't, it's very hard to do, I think, where we want to do craft barbecue and I want to do that level of the guys that I respect, like Aaron Franklin and others, but I want to serve it to you as quickly as possible and in an environment, you know, where, like we said, with all the other stuff. So
to build upon it, I mean, you know, like what were the challenges you guys went through last year with like as a small business, right? Like what was it like, you know, going through that? What was the hustle and all of that like for you and your wife? To have, you know, a smaller organization going through a challenge like that, was like the community supportive? I mean, was it family? Like, did, you know, how did you as a restaurant owner make it through?
I still don't know, to be honest with you. I think probably a lot of it is luck or you know, I would say providence. But I think we had a moment where this was early on, and I'm not sure. Maybe March, you know, of 2020, it was like the very start of where we finally were kind of like, this isn't going away. Like, this is a pretty serious deal. And I want to say it was a Monday because I know we were closed at our River location, but we were all kind of sitting there with our, you know, kind of our leadership team. And it was like a nightmare is kind of, a polite way to describe it. It was just this feeling of like, we may not have a business in a week, you know, and sort of everything that we've done. And, you know, at this time right now, sitting here, we have over 160 employees that work for us. And, that was, so it was a little bit less cause we hadn't opened Dallas, you know, at that point, but we're like, literally you feel a responsibility of, I have 100 families that are relying on this place being open. And how are we going to do that? And, how are we going to, you know, kind of, make that happen? And so it was, terrifying in a lot of ways, but you sort of were kind of like, our philosophy was, let's take it day by day. And we, from the start, we're like, we're not letting anyone go. We're not, you know, doing a furlough or whatever. We'll just try to make it work. And the, especially that first month, we were losing about 20 to 25 grand a week, just by keeping everyone employed and having everything, like, you know, nothing, everything's fine, you know, like, don't worry. And we had switched to go and only, and couldn't have any dining room. And then one of the biggest things actually was, we had that around that time, just for our, like, a regular weekend of service at our river store, I had about $20,000 worth of meat in our inventory. And so we're like, I don't know if we can even be open tomorrow. So I know Jared follows me on Twitter and some of my Twitter rantings, but I just put a post up like, hey, I got a ton of meat. If you guys want to come buy it, like, we'll sell it. And so I didn't know at the time that that's illegal, but, you know, it's kind of like, ask for forgiveness later.
Did you get away with
but
it?
But then Abbott. Yeah, I mean, you know, what do I care? It was like, I'm not just going to throw this away. So, and then it was later where Abbott signed a thing where, you know, it was okay or whatever. But we had people literally, I mean, there's a photo that my wife took where there's probably 200 people in line that showed up to buy briskets. You know, we were just trying to, like, we got to do something with this. So it's, there is moments like that where, despite the just, you know, despair and uncertainty of everything, we were like, people are going to support us. People are going to care. We did a t-shirt that said family sticks together. And the whole idea was people can buy the t-shirt. 100% of the proceeds went to our staff. And so we sold 1 billion t-shirts and raised, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars for that. And so there was moments like that, that were really special and that I think kind of show you, like, you know, the Texas spirit and really what that means of, like, it wasn't just, because people are dealing with real shit. Like, yeah, I don't know if you can cuss on this, sorry, but people are dealing with, you know, real problems besides, like, oh, I can't cook barbecue anymore. And so to be able to see, you know, people that were also struggling, but that were still like, I care about this restaurant. I want to support them. I want to support their employees. That was, I mean, it was amazing, really amazing. So,
Travis, I'm curious. You know, that's the story you just shared is awesome, and I think it's been really cool following you on social media and just knowing some of the challenges that you guys have had overcome and the way you've spoken up for other small businesses, small restaurants, letting people know of some of the challenges that come with that. And I'm, you know, I know that there's a, and you've already talked about it, how you guys all kind of stick together. While, yeah, you do compete with other, you know, other barbecue joints, there's a camaraderie. Is there a place maybe not well known throughout the state of Texas, a barbecue spot that you're like, I want to give these guys some love, that they really impress you? Maybe it's in a big city, maybe it's not in a big city, a hole in the wall, maybe not a hole in the wall, but just a barbecue spot that you found throughout the state that you just really love.
That's a great question. And a few are coming to mind. I mean, the first one that I'd say is Riverport Barbecue, which is in Jefferson, Texas, in East Texas. But my friend Steven Joseph owns it, and it's like everything you want in a barbecue place, really kind of old school stuff, but small town, you know, vibes, all of that. And you know, you take a drive out there, it's not really close to anything, but they do a really good job. He was in the Texas Monthly Top 50 the last time they did it, and so that, you know, kind of tells you the quality that he's putting out, even for a small town. But, you know, they're great. There's a place, Brett's Barbecue in Rockdale, that it's relatively newer. But he's the same way. He's just a nice guy, and he's really committed to kind of the, all the old school, you know, stuff that, that guys like us care about and respect towards what you're doing. But, you know, it's also just a fun place to go and hang out. So I'm sure, you know, there's a million others, but yeah.
I guess the million-dollar question here, you are going to enjoy some barbecue, but you're also cooking something up. You're a big Rangers fan. Who is at that table? You got four seats, four Rangers seats, and you can occupy the fifth. So you'll be joined by four guests. Who are the Rangers folks who are going to join you for some Heim barbecue?
You put me out. This is a million-dollar question. I have a question. Are they current Rangers, or can I pick former Rangers?
You can do and dead or alive too. Current, former, okay. Anyone.
I got to hands down Nolan Ryan, number one. Got to go with Nolan Ryan. This is where it gets tough. Two, maybe my favorite. I would say, I think I can comfortably say my favorite player growing up, Rusty Greer. Number two, because you know he's probably just got some good stories too.
For sure.
Three, who would I go with? Probably Pudge. I'd probably say Pudge. He was like right in my sweet spot of growing up, and you know, what was it, 96 All-Star game, you know, I went to, and you know, I just have fond memories of him, and just, you know, absolute laser beam for an arm. And he's also in the restaurant industry now, I guess. You know, I think he has a couple of restaurants, so you know, I don't know, maybe we could talk shop with that. And then no offense to any current players, I think fourth, this may be a wild card, but Ron Washington, I'd probably, because if we're having a party, I feel like you'd probably want Ron there. So that, I think that would be my four. I'm going to think about that all day and probably have a different answer tomorrow, but that might be, yeah.
I think Ron would bring some great stories as well, for sure. That's a yeah. Baseball.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Ron can provide the entertainment, so.
Yeah, no kidding. we really appreciate you joining us. Thanks so much for the time. Be sure to check out Travis's. He's got his own podcast with his wife, Emma, Heim Time, small business podcast, and definitely go and check out Heim Barbecue. If you have, you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't, you're missing out. Locations in Fort Worth and then one now near Love Field in Dallas. It is legitimately right across the street from Love Field, and you can't miss it with the signage. Travis, again, thanks so much for joining us on the Straight Up Texas podcast.
Thanks a lot, guys. I really appreciate it. And I was going to note, if you do go to Dallas, there's a good chance you'll see one of three people, either Jared, Eric Nadel, or our friend Evan Grant. But like one of the three of you guys is in there almost every day, I think. So if you want an autograph or something, you know, that's the spot to go to. But yeah, thanks a lot, guys. I really appreciate it.
Looking forward to more of the Straight Up Texas podcast, so be on the lookout. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.